This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U-Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Noelle Lim. The Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership, or the CPTPP Free Trade Agreement, aims to make trade more seamless among countries in Asia-Pacific, Latin America and Canada, and holds the promise of cheaper goods and services. Malaysia has signed but not ratified the CPTPP due to pushback by politicians and NGOs. Today we examine if the CPTPP will indeed benefit Malaysians by speaking to a supporter of the agreement, Tricia Yeo, the CEO of Ideas Malaysia, and opponent Azlan Awang, chairman of Bantah TPP and senior fellow of MTEM, or Majlis Tindakan Ekonomi Melayu. Thank you, Azlan and Tricia, for making time for us. And we'll start with this question for you, Tricia. How would signing the CPTPP give Malaysia additional economic advantages from what we already have, or is it really about avoiding losing out to other countries like Vietnam?
The CPTPP, in our opinion, would actually deepen the economic advantages that Malaysia would have. So in a study that we conducted, we looked at how our GDP could actually be boosted by an additional 1%. And this could translate into 140,000 additional jobs and employment opportunities. And even though 1% does not seem very high, it's just a small, you know, one digit. But I think given the current circumstances of our economic decline following the pandemic this year, and I know that many other countries are suffering as well, but where we can take advantages of low-hanging fruit, we should do that. And we know that employment is also a problem emerging from the crisis this year. We should take advantage of every possible opportunity. The CPTPP allows Malaysia to access other countries' markets. So other signatories of the agreement as of March 2018 would include countries like Australia, Brunei, Chile, Japan, Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, Vietnam. And it would give us access to countries like Canada, Mexico, and Peru, which we don't currently have free trade agreements with. And so with a large, you know, market size of 10 times bigger market size, these three countries alone, than the Malaysian economy, it would allow our businesses to flourish and to access those markets. You can create new sectors like our research shows aerospace, medical devices has promise for those, apart from the existing sectors that would benefit.
Azlan, what are your concerns about the CPTPP?
To us, it's going to be a big negative. If only we could measure all the other losses that could not be easily measured. For instance, the loss of our self-rule and sovereignty and policy space and so on. We have seen what PricewaterhouseCoopers have done. That was earlier. That was under TPPA with US within the agreement. What we saw was basically a small hike, about 1.15% average on a GDP increase, an investment, quite a big investment, 239 billion. But we must remember, for every FDI, there will be the repatriation of profits, you know, and that more or less amount to about almost just slightly lower than two in the past, what we have seen in the past. So when you talk about an investment of 239 billion, right, they're going to make a lot of profit as well, which they're going to repatriate. So the outflow would be in the region of about 450 billion a year, even with the US market in the TPPA, in the earlier cost and benefit. There would be slight increase in export, but a very big increase in import. Therefore, the trade surplus will decline. And what more, without USA, I think the gains will be very negligible, or if not negative, you know. So, but that's as far as what could be calculated, you know, based on a certain model, which many have said are flawed, you know. FTAs that we have signed, just now Tricia mentioned that we have FTAs with all the countries within the CPTPP, except for Peru, Mexico and Canada. Now, as far as these seven countries, or six countries, we would have the direct FTAs with them, or indirect FTA through ASEAN. right? With the three other countries, we could have a direct bilateral arrangement with them, another bilateral FTAs, perhaps less onerous, for instance, a goods-only trade agreement. CPTPP is mostly based on a negative list approach. All the laws and policies, regulations, and what have you, that we have been implementing over this year, all this time, will be nullified, will be superseded, by all the provisions in the CPTPP, right? Except those that you have been able to identify and want to be exempted from the CPTPP. You cannot actually model up this arrangement, this situation, and to find out what is the real cost and real benefit. You know,
could you respond to what Azlan is saying and exemptions that we can work in or maybe carve out conditions?
One is that he talked about the trade balance, right? That based on the previous study and the latest study, I think I can share with him as well. We actually have done two papers already on the CPTPP, so not the TPPA, because there's been revision and there are changes as well. I think the traditional trade, the way we think of trading finished products, that kind of world has transformed quite rapidly into the world today where we call it, you know, global value chains, right? So GVCs, where it's not finished products that are actually being traded mostly. The trade that we're talking about is like inputs and output trade. The fact that Malaysia has a very strong and competitive electronic market, it means that we would be able to access lower cost input that would help to make perhaps even our domestic industries more competitive. If we have lower cost inputs from other countries, so yes, that on paper would show that our imports increase, but that could also mean that we are increasing our competitiveness in other sectors. So I think I would encourage us to think along the lines of the global value chain and how like inputs can also be more competitive and cheaper for our local manufacturers. Azlan also mentioned policy freedom. So yes, I know that's a very common concern. Our Malaysian negotiators at MITI, we shouldn't underestimate their abilities. In fact, what they have done very successfully is already achieve a lot of carve-outs for our version of the CPTPP. So we have very specific exemptions already in the areas of Bumiputra policy, in the areas of public procurement, in the areas of state-owned enterprises. And I think these are the three chapters that the concerns have always regularly been expressed, even from within our local GLCs. We do have broad powers to pursue our own Bumiputra development. So things that, for instance, what is going to be rolled out, maybe under the Shared Prosperity Vision, our existing race-based affirmative action policy, that would still remain. And then you have a whole range of other things like foreign equity restrictions in automotive manufacturing, and you have all refined petroleum products that must be exported still. We have local content requirements for palm oil plantations, restrictions on fishing. We still will maintain our state-level controls over land and real estate. We have PETRONAS that would still maintain control over petroleum, and the government would be exempted from the national MFN treatment. So MFN stands for Most Favored Nation treatment over the divestment and privatization of government services and state-owned enterprises, or what we generally like to call GLCs in Malaysia. So I think when we talk about policy freedom, apart from the CPTPP text, if you look at the MITI website, and I'm not, you know, speaking on behalf of the government here, I'm just saying that there is documentation on its website that you can already check, where there are significant carve-outs and side letters that will allow Malaysia to sufficiently retain our policy freedom. So apart from the main document, what normally the governments do is the governments will actually issue side letters with each other on other things that are, you know, exempted from the main document itself. And you can see all the side letters that Malaysia has already signed with the other signatories of the CPTPP countries. So I think that our negotiators have done fairly well to represent our country's interests. I don't think that should be so much of a concern in terms of our our own local policy interests, especially on Bumiputra, which, as I said earlier, probably was the main concern from among our locals.
Well, MITI has already carved out protection for Bumiputras in the CPTPP. What areas are you still not satisfied with?
I also must applaud the effort, seriousness, performance of the negotiators, what they have done, right? I think we shouldn't question their sincerity. But I must say that as far as our dealings with MITI, there has definitely been a lack of proper engagement and consultation between NGOs and stakeholders on various issues. Now, as far as Bumiputra policy is concerned, right, there has not been any engagement, right? So we don't know, because we have been trying to have right from day one when they started negotiating, we had been knocking on MITI doors and proposing. Firstly, they agreed, and then they had cancel those engagement. Bumi policy is not what MITI simplistically assumed to be just government procurement, you know. So the bulk of the carve out is basically on government procurement. Yes, there is the 30% carve out for Bumi Putra forever as far as the agreement is concerned, and there's also thresholds which will last between 11 to 21 years, goods and services between 8 to 11 years, and then for construction contracts up to about 21 years, right? So, but it will diminish very fast at the end of those threshold period for construction, for instance, what is not covered under the agreement, that means other country contractors also can participate, will be only about 70 million. That means the threshold is 70 million. Anything above 70 million, we cannot close it for foreign contractors, those who are under the CPTPP countries. I mean, the nation is going to lose out a lot of businesses as far as SOE procurement is concerned, because there's only a 40% rule. But at the same time, there's also the leeway where any companies that are based in Sabah and Sarawak, and could be an Australian company, right, or could be a German company, as far as they are addressed, based in Sabah and Sarawak, they can participate in most of the procurements. The Bumi policy, as how we see it, is work in progress. You know, there has not been a finalization.
Yes, it's certainly been a long-standing issue. On The Breakfast Grill this morning, I'm speaking with Azlan Awang, Chairman of Banta TPP and Senior Fellow of MTEM or Majlis Sindakan Ekonomi Melayu, and Tricia Yeo, the CEO of IDEAS, about Malaysia's involvement in the controversial CPTPP or the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership. We will continue our discussion about the merits of ratifying this agreement. Keep it here.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back. I'm joined by Azlan Awang, Chairman of Banta TPP and Senior Fellow of MTEM, and Tricia Yeo, the CEO of IDEAS. If the CPTPP is ratified and enforced, companies and workers, not just Bumiputras, but also non-Bumiputras, will be displaced. How can we support them? What can we learn from the experiences of other countries?
Whether companies, whether Bumiputra or not, will be affected? Yes, the answer is yes. And I think you're right, Noel, that we can learn from the examples and best practices of other countries where they have spent quite a lot of time and effort educating their SMEs in particular about how they can actually benefit from the trade agreement. So yes, there may be some sectors and industries that will have to, or that may probably not be as competitive as they are now because it's being opened up to a much more international market. I think what countries can do is actually emerge with some kind of trade adjustment policies which would address the labor market. So whether there's any negative impact of the adjustments, I think in the past, a country like the US, even in the early 70s, they already had trade adjustment assistance, like a TAA program that will provide support to workers or firms or regions actually that are adversely affected by trade reforms or changes in trade flows. And so this is something that our government can consider, providing this kind of trade adjustment assistance program. And it could be things like benefits, job training, job searching assistance, wage subsidy for older workers, technical assistance for companies, for guided economic recovery. I want to talk a little bit more about like the governance angle as well, because I think Azlan mentioned procurement, right? We have been talking about the need to move to a much more transparent and accountable procurement system. I mean, IDEAS itself has worked on a project for at least 8 years in encouraging more transparency and a more accountable procurement system. It's very, very difficult to do internally. And it's very difficult to get these government reforms done on an as-is basis right now.
You talk about governance. I think this issue, this argument need to be discussed, you know, because we are saying that it is better for an agreement to impose reforms on us rather than be able to change the government or change the politicians, right? I think this is the argument. So I think that's a very dangerous argument. These reforms can be done within unilaterally within us, right? By ourselves, right? We have, of course, to address the political situation, because it's the politicians and the powers that be that determine the reforms that needs to be done. I agree that there are several areas, or probably many areas, that need to be reformed, right? But does it need that we sign up to an agreement that is very expensive, broad, and very full of entrapments, to be able to do some reforms.
How do we reform from within? I mean, obviously, we have done this experiment for the last 30 years and reforms mm-hmm. seem very slow. So what would you suggest is an alternative? Obviously, we can't continue the way we've been continuing for the last
agreed.
30 to 40
agreed.
Years.
Agreed. I think this has got to be put to the leadership, right? The political leadership, right? And of course, this has got to be addressed. We as voters, that's got to be done. It's got to be done by ourselves, not by third parties. And I think I would want to touch a bit on investment protection, the heritage economic freedom ranking is concerned, right? We are in the top 30s, you know. I think we are ranked something like 25th or something like that. And we are better than China. China is 103. Vietnam is 105, right? KL, or the greater KL, is one of the best destinations for investment. We are definitely not short of people's confidence, as far investors' confidence in the system that we have. But if we have to actually review our fetishness on FDIs. Okay, what we have to mobilize is the domestic investment, right? And then why do we need FDI for? Okay, for jobs, but there are many, many cases. For instance, the electronic and electrical sector, right, which dominates our export statistics. They are something like almost 35% to 40%. We are exporting E&E, right? We are not brand owners. We are just we assemble the domestic value added gain is only about 15%, and that's with them guzzling our energy, cheap energy. Not paying tax because they would get tax holidays. But we should welcome FDI, but we have to be selective.
But wouldn't the CPTPP also help improve domestic investments?
Okay, our problem is actually under consumption. And we have a situation where the industries are over capacity and as far as the rakyat is concerned, they have no money to buy. Our wages are low. So obsessed with FDI that you even suppress. I mean, indirectly, you suppress the wages. So this is what we are getting. That's why I say we must not compete with Vietnam, right? Vietnam is probably going to get more FDIs and whatnot. But should we be racing to the bottom like them? We shouldn't.
There are many structural problems in our economy, and it will take a long time to fix these problems. So as a result of ratifying the CPTPP too soon, might we end up racing to the bottom as we are compelled to stay cost competitive?
There needs to be a new way of looking at our economy. And certainly there are many things that we haven't yet explored. We haven't talked about things like sustainability and our energy mix and so on. But I don't think that it is a reasonable thing to say that we don't want to accept FDIs anymore. I think that...
I'm not saying that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay,
I'm not saying that. And when you talk about transfer of technology, there is a provision which is called performance requirement, right? Which may not allow transfer of technology, with that a country imposed a transfer of technology clause in the investment agreement, you know, right? Which we're not going to gain under the CPTPP.
Can I please respond? So I think CPTPP or not, are we willing to try and ensure that we actually do not race to the bottom, but race to the top? When is it that Malaysia will be willing to actually open ourselves out to become more competitive, that we can actually, you know, boldly, courageously tell ourselves that, yes, we can be on par with the Singapores of the world. We can be on par with other industries. What is the signal that we are sending if we actually pull out of something that we have already signed? I think the question of governance that you talked about, that, you know, we should not depend on something international to push ourselves from within. I mean, I don't really buy that argument, because I think that whatever it takes, I would be willing, whether it's from internal or external factors, to push at any opportunity of governance to strengthen our transparency and anti-corruption measures. Let's not forget that anti-corruption is also part of the agreement, to improve the governance of our GLCs, to increase accountability for government, to have a more transparent and accountable procurement system. I mean, these are the opportunities that are really at the tip of our fingers and that we can, you know, boldly strike towards. And again, it is an opportunity to race to the top, not to the bottom. And I think this will be a missed opportunity. And I think what Noel said at the very beginning of the interview is that if we don't choose to do this, that also sends a signal that essentially we are choosing not to play in that game.
Okay, as far as MTEM is concerned, right, a lot of our members are in the exporting business, you know. So MTEM is not anti-trade. We are not. So it must not be said that to oppose CPTPP is that you are anti-trade, you are anti-FDI. No, we are not anti-FDI, right? But I think it is more prudent to pursue more domestic investment, but be a bit more careful on FDI. This is what we're saying. Because you're only going for labor-intensive industries.
Yeah, so I just respond to that. I agree with you that we should also be highly selective in the kinds and the quality of the FDI that come in. If they are going to bring upon more negative impact, then those are the FDIs that we do not want to approve. And again, you know, I think our local MIDA representatives have gone through this kind of stringent checklist, right? So they will actually check, okay, will they be bringing value added to the country or not? We're not simply going to accept any FDI that comes and makes, you know, these extra demands that in fact don't improve our economy. So I completely agree that we can be selective on the FDI.
All right. Thank you so much for your views, Tricia Yeo, the CEO of IDEAS, and Azlan Awang, Chairman of Banta TPP and Senior Fellow of MTEM. I'm Noel Lim on BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.